Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
This breaking news, this just in. It is Sister Jean's world, and the rest of us are only living in it. If you didn't know that before last night, you do now. Because as good as Porter Moser is, Clayton Custer, and the rest of the Loyola Ramblers, as good as they all are, we know who is truly calling the shots there. It's the 98-year-old nun turned international superstar. How else do you explain Loyola going to the Elite Eight after beating Nevada 69-68? How else do you explain Andre Jackson hitting a go-ahead three with less than 3 minutes left after he had not hit one in a month? How else do you explain Marcus Towns scoring 15 in the first two games and then scoring 18 last night, including that absolute dagger three with just over 6 seconds to go up four? How else do you explain the fact that the Loyola of Chicago Ramblers are one win away from the final freaking four? Sister Jean, that's how. Well, Sister Jean, and the fact that these Ramblers are brass as hell. There is no other way to put it. Three tournament wins by a total of 4 points. They were down 12 in the first half last night. Then they go on a run, and they go up 12 in the second half, only to see Nevada do what Nevada had done to Texas and Cincinnati before them. The Wolfpack are relentless. They keep coming at you. They wear you down. I've said it time and time again. They're as much a reflection of their head coach as any team I know. Man, so much pride, so much heart, and so much fire. And it was all on display last night as they were able to grind their way back into that game. But, and I can't believe I would say this, but nobody ever thought this was coming. But Loyola is not Texas. Loyola is not Cincinnati. The Ramblers were rocked, but they did not collapse. They manned up. They hit huge shots when they needed them most. And many of those huge shots came after Sister Jean came down from the stands and went over near the bench with only 3 minutes to go in the game. And as the legend of Sister Jean goes, we start getting Sister Jean facts. You know, that sound like ripoffs of Chuck Norris facts. Like this one from Arizona Cardinals media relations legend, Mark Dalton. Loyola's Sister Jean was born on August 21st, 1919. The NFL was formed on August 20th, 1920. Sister Jean is older than the NFL and maybe more popular. Another fact, according to Pat Forty, she has two athletic department staffers that are helping her with all of her media requests. Sister Jean has an entourage. You gotta love that. But she did admit last night. Last night was tough on her. Quote, "It was getting pretty bad. I thought they might have to resort to my nitro. But I didn't have to do that." End quote. Good thing too. Because if Sister Jean goes nitro, Nevada never has a chance. And as soon as that horn sounded, Loyola knew that they were going to be facing Wildcats. Wildcats of some kind in the Elite Eight. But I don't think that anybody really thought they'd be facing the Kansas State kind. But they are, because K-State, transition, K-State turned in a performance every bit as brass as Loyola's. This group, regarded as maybe the worst of the remaining 16, going up against Kentucky in Catlanta. And they didn't show an ounce of fear or grip. They jump out to an early lead. Kentucky goes on a run. They go on a run of their own, and they just keep trading runs. But Bruce Weber's crew never let Kentucky get comfortable or get any kind of control. Remember, before that tournament, John Calipari was pointing out how nasty the South region was. Then when the top four teams were cleaned out and everybody said Kentucky would roll to the Final Four, he told his guys, do not drink the poison. I'm not going to say they drank the poison last night, because they ran into a beast in K-State. But that doesn't mean that that loss is not going to sting for a long, long time. That it's not going to stay with the BBN for a long, long time. Because Kentucky had their chances. Especially from the foul line, where they missed 14 attempts. In a three-point game, that's going to kill you. P.J. Washington, in particular, had a nightmare from the foul line. He missed 12 throws. It's a brutal night for a guy who had been a much better free throw shooter during the season. But But I can't put that on him. I can't bash him because there's no way they're even in that game without his 18 and 15. No, last night was much more about K-State doing to Kentucky what they did to them. It was more about Kansas State than it was Kentucky. Because going into this tournament, nobody knew that much about K-State. But you do now. Now you know how tough they are defensively. Now you know how relentless they are offensively. And now you know they don't back down. And K-State is doing all of this without their best player. They're in the Elite Eight without Dean Wade, who has barely taken off his warmups. Like, no problem. Just as it was no problem when three of their guys fouled out last night. They just keep doing what they do. So what we have here is an Elite Eight between a couple of teams that really know who they are and what they're about. And one of them is 40 minutes away from the Final Four. An 11 and a 9 in the Elite Eight? To quote one Bartholomew Edward Scott, can't wait.
Can't wait.
Can't wait.
Can't wait.
Matt Norlander is my guest. Matt, great to have you back. Matt, good morning. How are you?
Wonderful Friday, Jim. Thanks for having me. How are you doing?
Great, bud. Great. Great to talk to you. I know you're in Stories, Connecticut right now, which I'll get to in just one moment. But let me ask you this. You're a young guy, but you've been covering college basketball for quite some time. What do you make of Porter Moser and the Loyola Ramblers?
I make of it that it's the best NCAA tournament story that we've had since George Mason in 2006. And I know that we've had Butler and VCU and Wichita State get there, and it's been awesome. But Loyola has got something terrific about it. And it's not just the Sister Jean stuff, and she's gone international. She's gone galactic, to be frank. She's awesome. But this team is so good. They move the ball so well. I was talking with some Missouri Valley coaches, and they said, listen, they don't waste possessions. Every single time they've got five guys on the floor, which is all the time, they're always moving the ball. They can all pass the ball so well. So when you watch them, and when you saw them play against Nevada last night, after a little bit of a shaky start, they were so strong, and it was beautiful basketball. It was almost San Antonio Spurs-like. So they are a tremendous story, but also a tremendous team. This team is legit. And fortunately, they won the Missouri Valley Conference Tournament title to get in with an automatic bid, because if they did not do that, I kind of cringe to think that maybe they would have been left out of the tournament and we would have been robbed of one of the great stories of this great event of the past 3 to 4 decades.
No, it's such a great point. It literally is one of the best stories I've ever seen. I mean, if you talk about a small Jesuit school like that, and when you think about what they have or what they don't have and their resources and their facilities, the fact that they're in the Elite Eight to me is a miracle in and of itself. But they're a win away from the Final Four. They're not just in the Elite Eight. In fact, Matt, let me ask you this. If you took the 11 away from Loyola's name, in fact, if you took Loyola's name away from Loyola's name and you only look at the numbers, how good is this team?
Yeah, they are one of the 25 best teams in the sport. There's no doubt about it. I thought they were actually underseeded when they got in the tournament. I thought they deserved to be in that 8-9 game based on what they had done and the fact that they had won at Florida. And, yeah, because they've got the 11 next to their name, because they've got Loyola, because they haven't been in the tournament since 1985, they've got a heavy Cinderella feel to them. But I've said earlier this week, this team is really, really good. They are a Cinderella in terms of a storyline, but not in terms of their capability. They can get to the Final Four. I think they will. I thought they were going to do that when I thought they were going to play Kentucky in the Elite Eight. And Clayton Custer is just tremendous. He's the Missouri Valley Player of the Year. And what makes them so dangerous is that although Custer is their best player, there's really, you'll sometimes hear coaches say this, but with Loyola, it's really true. Their second option is basically five other guys, and they're all equally capable of beating you. Jim, did you see how they were living around the rim last night and just killing Nevada?
Oh, yeah.
Reverse layups and back cuts. It was insane. It was beautiful basketball. And if they make the Final Four, obviously that's going to stand as one of the biggest stories in sports this year. And it will make 2018, this NCAA tournament, one of the most memorable ever, no matter what happens after that, because we'll have Loyola in the Final Four and obviously out of the same region, UMBC being the first 16 to beat a one.
The Daily Jungle today is brought to you by Burrow. Oh, man, let me tell you about Burrow. Burrow is handcrafted in the USA, and they make luxury couches for real life. I'm not sure you've ever seen a product like this. It's awesome. It's the same quality that you would expect from high-end retailers without breaking the bank, and everything is customizable. You pick your size, color, and armrest height to get the couch that is perfect for you. And Burrow couches are even stain-resistant, which is huge, always, and especially this weekend with all the basketball action going on. I do this. I eat my dinner on the couch in front of the games. Also, and this is amazing, a built-in USB charger for your devices when they're in the red. Say goodbye to that extra long charge cord. Better yet, all Burrow furniture is easy to put together and take apart. No tools required, only your bare hands. Enjoy 30 days of naps on your Burrow, risk-free. If for any reason you choose not to keep it, the return process is so simple. Go try a Burrow couch for yourself. Order it today. It ships in a jiffy. Use the promo code Rome at Burrow.com and get $50 off your order. Burrow.com. Offer code Rome. You have to do it all caps to take advantage. Burrow.com. Offer code Rome, all caps. Now it's back to our Daily Jungle. Matt Norlander joining us. It was beautiful basketball. I could not believe the way they attacked the basket over and over and over again and the way they moved the ball. But, Matt, I never thought that I'd say this. I said that when Nevada made their run, because you knew they would, they always do. However, and I didn't think I'd ever say it, Loyola is not Texas. Loyola is not Cincinnati. Loyola is something totally different altogether. Now, let me ask you about Kansas State. They were not expected to make much noise at all in the tournament. In fact, Matt, most of the noise around K-State basketball has been from K-State fans who wanted to get rid of Bruce Weber. What do you make of the job that he's done in the tournament, essentially without their best player?
It's been an amazing thing for Kansas State, which was projected to be eighth in the Big 12. And the Big 12 is the best league in college basketball. But you said it, Jim. K-State fans have wanted Bruce Weber out for years. This is not a secret. They have been lobbying for this, despite the fact that he is now in his fourth NCAA tournament in six seasons there. And here's an Elite Eight run out of the blue, out of nowhere, and they got a little bit of a favor in having to face UMBC in the second round, but whatever. The bracket breaks the way it breaks, and you take advantage of the opportunities in front of you, and Kansas State last night proved what it has basically established over the past 2 months. It really is one of the 15 to 20 best defensive teams in the country. And the fact that it faced a Kentucky team that wasn't good from three-point range, that was filled with freshmen, and that was playing well but has been up and down all season, they took advantage, and man, did they make some opportunity, really, really opportunistic baskets. And it is, this tournament is just amazing, Jim, because we've never had a 9 versus an 11 in an Elite Eight game. It's the first time it's ever happened. Those combined seeds, obviously, are 20. That shatters the modern era record, which was 15, and we saw that in 2000 and 2002. And I understand why people want to see the big-time programs, the Blue Bloods, the mainstream appeal in this Elite Eight and Final Four, but for me, we're going to get that tonight. We got that on the right side of the bracket, you know, Villanova and Duke and Kansas. I love when we get the unprecedented. That's why the NCAA tournament every single year is such a rewarding viewing experience, because it will always give you something we've never seen before. And what we're going to get there is either Kansas State or Loyola getting to the Final Four for the first time since the early 1960s.
See, that's my thing too, Matt. I mean, we're going to get the Blue Bloods. We'll get the Blue Chips. I can't stop thinking about Loyola, though. I just, for the life of me, I can't imagine a program that size with what they have, as I mentioned, haven't been there in three decades, and they get there and they get to the Elite Eight, and now they're 40 minutes away from the Final Four. We can have all those things. The tournament is amazing. Now, as I mentioned, Matt, you're in Storrs, Connecticut. You're there for Dan Hurley's introductory presser. You spent a lot of time around him lately. You had a great piece on him earlier this season, so you've got a sense of who he is, what he's about, how he approaches things. He had a very good thing going at Rhode Island, so why do you think he made this move?
Yeah, he had a great thing going at Rhode Island, and if he wanted, with what they offered, he had the potential to really rule the Atlantic 10 the next 5 to 7 years. But he takes this job here at UConn because you have to. This kind of job comes up maybe once in your life, and he had the unusual position of picking between Pitt and the ACC, more money, less pressure, or going to a historic program like UConn, which has four national titles since 1999. So ultimately, he doesn't have to leave too far from where he was. Obviously, he's a Northeast guy, and the program still has a big pull. I understand that the fan base for UConn, they don't like the fact that they're in the American Athletic Conference. They're not in the Big East. They're not in the AC. But overall, they've got so much potential still, okay? And there's so much hunger for UConn to return to its prominence as a top 10, top 15 program. Hurley is built for that. He is a fiery competitor. He is not the next Jim Calhoun, okay? But he has a lot of those traits that made Calhoun such a terrific leader for this program. And basically, he built UConn up from almost nothing. So the keys here going forward are, you know, he's not Jim Calhoun, and no, UConn is not in the Big East. But can it get back to where it's competing for Sweet 16s on an annual basis? I think that's a reasonable expectation. Give him a little bit of time. for both school and man. I think this really is a near-perfect marriage, and UConn has found its coach for the future.
I love that hire. I love that hire. I think they could not have done any better, and I think that he's doing the right thing. You're right. When they make that call, you've got to take that opportunity. I think that's a great, great hire. Now, after the presser, you're driving to Boston for two Sweet 16 games tonight, starting with West Virginia and Villanova. Jay Wright's crew, Matt, arguably the most impressive in the first weekend, but can West Virginia cause some problems for them?
Oh, they can, and I think that they will, because here's the thing. Javon Carter is such a talent as a senior. And when you look at him versus Jalen Brunson, Jalen Brunson is the leader for player of the year in college basketball this season. But when you stack those two players up next to each other, Jim, you say, who's the better basketball player right now in college? It's Jalen Brunson, but it's not by much, because Carter's the better defender. He's a tremendous point guard overall. And so will their matchup dictate who wins tonight? And if it doesn't, will it be Sagaba Kanate on Mikal Bridges down low? I think this has a great, great potential to be an old-school kind of Big East game in an old Big East town there in Boston. I think Villanova is going to win, but West Virginia can certainly muck this game up, and it's got potential to be the best game we see tonight.
All right, then finally, in the nightcap, you've got Chris Beard and Texas Tech going up against Purdue. You have been high on the Boilermakers ever since the bracket was released. What is the key then for the Red Raiders in that game?
You know what? It might be Keenan Evans's toe. You know, we've got
right.
These body parts can sometimes loom so large in the NCAA tournament. And I know you've had Chris Beard on your show plenty. He's got a lot of talent on this team. He's a tremendous coach. I understand this game doesn't have a lot of just headline appeal because Texas Tech isn't a perennial Final Four contender. Purdue is not obviously battling for Final Fours every single year. But I tell you what, Purdue is shoot it from three. In fact, Boston could be witness to a lot of big-time shot-making tonight. Because Villanova is the best offense in the country. Purdue's the best three-point offense in the country. And overall, I think Purdue's going to win this game. And if Texas Tech can steal it from them, Keenan Evans is going to have to play like the superstar he has been so frequently this season. And given the way that Texas Tech played against Florida last weekend, that was the best game no one's talking about. If they play that way again, they're going to be able to steal it. And then one obvious thing we got to touch on here is that Isaac Haas, his brace has been cleared, and you had Purdue engineers like working with materials and fabric that might not even be known to them in our known universe, but they got it done. And the question is, will he play? Matt Painter doesn't think that's going to happen. So if Haas is on the floor, how productive will he be? And if he's not productive, they're not going to chance that. So without him, Purdue goes with a smaller look. And to me, that makes for a more entertaining game.
The Daily Jungle today brought to you in part by Fan Exchange, especially pertinent when you consider all the basketball action going on this weekend, right? I mean, are you thinking about buying tickets to your favorite sports, concert, or theater event? Maybe you want to experience March Madness courtside rather than on your couch. Head on over then to fanexchange.com for a safe, easy, and reliable experience. Tickets purchased on Fan Exchange are always guaranteed. No getting to the gate and worrying about getting in. So whether it's March Madness or MLB Opening Day, which is right around the corner, WrestleMania, Coachella, or a Broadway musical, Fan Exchange gets you closer to the action. Find the very best seats at the best prices at fanexchange.com. Use the promo code ROME. Promo code ROME will get you 50% off the service fees on your next purchase. Fan Exchange, we have tickets. Now it's back to our Daily Jungle. Michigan is a basketball school. They're a basketball school. That's right, I said it. And let me also say this. John Beilein is the best coach on that campus. Yeah, I know. Hey, Rome, tell us something that we didn't already know. Right. One guy is making $9 million a year to finish in fourth place in the Big Ten East. Beilein is doing what he always does. Rolling out, winning games, making tournament runs. 316 runs in 6 years. And not only did they beat a really good Texas A&M team that destroyed North Carolina, they beat them down. A hospital job. And Michigan's got the look of a team that can win this entire thing. All A&M head coach Billy Kennedy could do in the postgame was tip his cap to the victors. Quote, it felt like we ran into a buzzsaw. End quote. And he was right. Because Michigan picked the perfect evening to get right on offense. We know how tough they are defensively, but they finally got right offensively. Mo Wagner filling it up with 21 on only 12 shots. 14 of those in the first half. Muhammad Ali Abdur-Rahman, 24-5-7. Getting 16 of his in the first 20 minutes. Charles Matthews, 18. Duncan Robinson, 10 off the bench. And while every other game last night featured some kind of version of grind it out, get it to the second half, the Wolverines had their shovel out from the jump, and they made sure that second half didn't even matter. That was supposed to be the closest game of the night. A&M had the size. They had the length. They were expected to be a force in the paint. Hell, they weren't even afraid to tell you about it before the game. On Wednesday, Aggie forward Robert Williams said the plan was, quote, to abuse people like we always do. Me and Tyler Davis, we're machines. We try to keep up that mindset. No one can stop us, end quote. Freshman point guard TJ Stark said, quote, I think I'm unguardable. I think I'm unstoppable, end quote. Well, come to find out, Michigan kept the two 6'10" monsters in check, and they locked Starks up. He went just 2-for-11 from the field, and they dropped daggers from the outside of the arc themselves. They had 8 different guys knocked down to 3. 8. That's an NCAA record. 3 for Wagner, 4 for Abdul-Rahman, 2 for Robinson. By the time it was over, even C.J. Baird got one, and he started the season as the team's student manager. You D up like that? And you have 8 guys knocking in 3 balls? Look, I know that in the tournament, especially in this tournament, every night is a grind. Nobody knows that better than Michigan. Hell, they would have been home watching Rob Gray in Houston if it weren't for Jordan Poole's buzzer beater. But that last night, that right there was the performance of the tournament. And this Michigan team is the scariest team left standing on that side of the bracket, arguably. They have the look to me of a team that can run the table. And while their coach is not out front running around with his shirt off or wearing throwback jerseys or spewing lava on Twitter, he is handling his business like an absolute G. And now the Wolverines are a game away from cutting down the nets and heading to the Final Four. Just another enormous win for a basketball powerhouse and a basketball school. John Beilein, for all the credit he gets, and he's starting to get more and more, it's still not nearly enough. That is a basketball power at a basketball school. Travis Kelce is my guest. Travis, good to have you back. How are you?
Jim, that is one heck of an intro. I don't know if I've had one quite like that yet.
Bro, I'm a pro. I'm a pro, bro. You know that. And you had a good year. And you're having a good life and a good career. In fact, tell me about your life, Travis. The offseason, what have you been up to? Bring me up to date. What's going on with you?
Well, today I'm teaming up with Old Spice, introducing the new Captain Scent, both available in the body wash and the antiperspirant deodorant, all available at Walmart. Guys can now get premium scents without the fancy bottles and the fancy price tags, thanks to Old Spice. So, I mean, I've always used Old Spice ever since college, and I started grabbing my own men's grooming or body washes and deodorants and everything. So, I mean, I love them to death, and I'll tell you what, it only gets better. Only gets better with Old Spice. But the off season is going good. Everybody's making moves, and it's making for a very interesting first week in the NFL, I can tell you that.
Hey, brother, were you afraid that I was not going to ask you about Old Spice?
No, I'm just so excited to talk about Old Spice.
Me too, man. Me too. Hey, that's good. I can't whistle. Travis Kelce joining me. All right, so talking about the offseason, let me ask you this first. What was it like to see your brother Jason win a Super Bowl and then completely go legend the way he did at that victory parade?
Man, that was definitely the coolest moment that I really got to experience ever, man. When you see how everything's unfolded in his life and how he's kind of had I don't want to say starting from the bottom mentality, but he's really just been told he wasn't going to do anything since the get-go. And I always knew he had it in him. My father always knew. My mother always knew. And to see him go to the Super Bowl, win the Super Bowl, man, I was in tears the entire game. That every single time I hear the press conference right after the game, I go to tears. I mean, I'm just so happy for the guy and what he's been able to accomplish. But the speech at the parade was one of the most legendary speeches I've ever heard.
Seriously,
for him to go up there in that outfit, man, and just spiel off everybody's weakness and what everybody was told they weren't going to be good enough for. You know, it's just it's awesome to see him shine in that moment, for sure.
You know, it's awesome to hear you talk about him like that, and that speech was amazing. I mean, that was the speech of all speeches. In a situation like that, for him to let it rip the way he did, I thought was a beautiful thing to see. Now, let me ask you this. Winning a Super Bowl, obviously, is your ultimate goal. You're always working towards that goal, but when you see your brother, get his, what does that do for your motivation? Does it even take you to another level?
Oh, for sure, and to be honest, it makes you feel like it's more obtainable. It makes you feel like it's more reachable, like it's right there. Like, he just done it. You know, I've been able to follow Jason in every aspect of life, really. I mean, from high school, I wasn't going to play football until I saw him playing football in college. I wasn't going to go to the University of Cincinnati, but then I was like, man, I get a chance to play college ball with my brother. Go to University of Cincinnati. The NFL comes around. He gets drafted by Andy Reid. I get drafted by Andy Reid. So, I mean, I've been able to follow his shoes. So, I mean, it makes it feel like, you know, I'm right there on the brink of it, and that this thing can go get grabbed.
Travis Kelce joining us. Travis, I got to ask you about the new proposed catch rule. Let me read this to you verbatim. Quote, control of the ball 2 feet down or another body part and making a football move such as a third step, reaching, extending for the line to gain or the ability to perform such an act. End of quote. Number one, does that sound like an improvement? Or better yet, number two, what the hell does that even mean? Do you even understand that?
I was just going to go through it. It just sounds like a whole bunch of jibber jabber. I feel like they want to keep the interest of the league, you know, and so they're acting like this is the problem in the league. You know, there have been quite a bit of games, important games that have been decided on one catch. So, you know, they want to keep the understanding that, hey, we're trying to fix this, that even though it might have been wrong before, we're trying to fix this and make it better for the game. So, but it won't really register in anybody's mind that it's any different until, okay, now we see the difference during the season. There's a few catches that might have been ruled incomplete last year that are being ruled complete. So,
Travis Kelce, my guest, listen, you would know way better than me, but let me bounce this off you. I've got a way that I think I can fix this. How about this? If the guy catches the ball, it's a catch. That's my rule. If the guy catches the ball, it's a catch. Does that work for you?
It works for me. I'm all for the if it's a catch, it's a catch.
Good. I'm glad we handled that. That was easy enough. You retweeted a picture yesterday of you with Michael Irvin with the caption, quote, saving this pick in the archives. Talk about a guy that's inspired me to play the game with passion. End of quote. Playmaker was unbelievable. What was it about him that inspired you so much? Why did you like his game and the way he went at it?
I respected his game when I was a young kid because you saw whenever he took that helmet off on the sideline after big plays, after moments where the Cowboys were just rolling, you could see how much excitement he had, not only for his plays, but his teammates' plays, how much excitement he had when the team was doing their best. And I fed off of that. I fed off of his how electric he was after he made plays, just to let everybody know, like, I'm unstoppable. You know, you're going to have to do something different if you want to stop this. So it's just I've always just appreciated that mentality and just the passion he's played the game with.
The guy was Travis. When I first started doing this thing, he was one of the first really big guys that I interviewed, and I can remember him walking in the room, and I was just blown away by this guy's it, like his charisma, like literally everything stopped. That guy walked in the room, and I had never seen a guy with that kind of presence. That's what it was. It was presence, and the presence came from like the passion. He played with passion. You play with passion. I had this really interesting conversation with Eric Weddle on my podcast this week, and he said, Rome, let me be straight about this. Not everybody loves the game. There are guys who are really good at the game. There are guys who love the life, but not everybody plays with passion or loves the game. My question is, how can you play at that level without it, and is there something to that? Are there guys that don't love the game and don't have the passion? They're just really talented.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say that there aren't guys anymore that love this game. I mean, there's guys on Sunday that will die for this game. I mean, heck,
sure.
Look what Ryan Shazier is doing right now. He's trying his hardest to get back in the league. And it's a scary thing to think about his situation and what could possibly happen. But he loves this game that much and wants to be one of the greatest ever. And that shows it enough, you know. That shows how much he really has passion to be on that field. So, I mean, there's guys out here that love it. But I can agree with Weddle, too, man. There's guys that – you could see it in their eyes when they line up on Sundays. It's just not the same attention to detail. It's not the same, you know, want for the guy next to you. And it's more so difficult to play with than play against, obviously. But as long as a guy has a come to work mentality, you know, and gives it his all, whether or not he loves this game or not, you know, I think that's just the integrity of being a man and doing your job. That's what you really look for. But you can think about it. The reasons why, I mean, heck, the money that guys get in the check. I mean, heck, a lot of people understand that you're not going to make this kind of money doing anything else especially at an age right out of college. So they take the mentality of, heck, I'm going to go in here, make a few, get a few contracts, and be able to start something that I really want to do after football. So, I mean, there's that motive. There's a motive of the publicity of people having it for a different, whatever you want to call it. But it's definitely out there, and it's unfortunate at times. But I feel like, you know what, you get dealt with what you get dealt with, and, you know, at least do your job with passion if you don't love what you do.
Travis Kelce, keeping it real. All right, once again, you're working with Old Spice. You're helping guys step up their scent game. You want to hit that thing on the way out the door? You go right ahead, my man.
Everyone, head to Walmart right now. The new Captain Scent is available there, both in the body wash and in the antiperspirant deodorant. You won't regret it if you're with anybody but Old Spice. You won't be with anybody Old Spice anybody else other than Old Spice after this one. I promise you.
I see it working. Fabian, brother, good morning. What's up? How are you?
Good morning, Rome. Good morning, clones. Rome, this is the thing. I called you 2 weeks ago, right? And, you know, to make my presence felt, you know. Look it. I told Winskis and I told Glowing Gabe I would do this, right? Call the jungle, give my little rub, some of that karma on me, bro. Swear to God, man, no lie here, okay? No lie. Dude, the following week, I start getting calls. I didn't apply anywhere. I haven't left home, dude, you know? I have not left home. Call me, boom, nah, I'm cool. They jack up the pay, nah, I'm cool. You know? Dude, I ended up telling what hours I wanted to work and what I wanted to get paid. And they're like, okay, you know? Right now, I just wanted to complete the process because I talked to the guy like about an hour ago. And he's like, you know what? There's one person ahead of you. If this cat doesn't show up by 1 o'clock, it's your job. I'm like, all right. You know, that's pretty much what I wanted to tell you right there. Dude.
All right,
I
so, Fabian, so let me understand this. So you called the show. You got karma. You were not working, and then you didn't even try to get a job, and then people started to call you, and then you said no, and they kept offering you more and more money. Is that what you're saying to me?
That is exactly what I'm saying, dude, and I didn't go in applying. Calls right, so, started coming in on their own. See, that's
so
the problem, because now clones...
Did you get the job? Did you get the job?
Like that, you know?
Did you get the job?
Right now, I'm waiting for the karma. I said, at 1 o'clock, bro.
Okay.
At 1 o'clock, they're going to let me know
Fabian,
if I got
what
it
is
or
the
not
job?
Today.
What is the job?
Oh, I can't tell you, bro.
Why?
Because I'm going to be get clowned, you know? It's
no, dude, bro, there's dignity in work. There's no building in all work. You won't get clowned. You will not get clowned. There's no building in work, man. You got to work. You got to do what you got to do to put food on the table and pay your bills. Nobody's going to clown you. At least I'm not. Give it to me, man. What are you looking at? What are you trying to get?
But still, you know, let's call it like material handling, and that'll work, you know.
That does work. Material handling. All right, man, listen. Fabian, I hope you get the karma. I hope you get that call at 1 o'clock. And whatever you do, man, hold out for more. Keep telling
thank
him
you,
no.
Thank you, Roman. You know what? The podcast is the best, right? The best one was Jason Williams, though. It's kind of like I'm trying to put like the top three, and it's kind of difficult. But I think Jason Williams is number one. All righty, I'm out, bro. Before I get a run. Oh, one more thing. Whatever happened to No Tolerance Friday, bro? Okay, late.
Right now, a lot of you do want to talk about the Jason Pierre-Paul trade. Just a year after he signed that 4-year, $40 million deal, guaranteed. Or I should say, 4 years, 40 of it, guaranteed. They're sending JPP, the Giants, to Tampa Bay, and in return, they get a third-round pick. And they're swapping fourth-rounders. So to me, the trade is really interesting for a lot of reasons. What it means for the draft. The Giants are picking it too. They now need a defensive end. Bradley Chubb is there waiting for them. So what does that mean? Or do they address the quarterback situation? Or are they comfortable rolling with Eli? Do they take a guy at two? Do they trade down? What's it mean to the Bills Mafia? Do they try and make a move and get up and get that pick? Lots of things going on. We could talk about what it means to Tampa Bay. GM Jason Light is not playing now. He ripped apart the worst pass rush in football. He added JPP and Vinnie Curry to a line that already had Pro Bowler Gerald McCoy. Lots of different angles. What's it mean to the Giants? What's it mean to the Bucks? What's it mean at the top of the draft? Now, here's what we're not going to talk about. The part of the trade that we're not going to talk about is the fact that Jason Pierre-Paul is missing a couple of fingers. Like, why y'all want to clown a guy who nearly blew his entire hand off in 2015, but somehow managed to make one of the most miraculous comebacks I have ever seen is beyond me. Again, do you have a soul? Have you ever made a mistake? Even better, have you ever made a life-changing mistake only to bust your ass and come all the way back from it? Ever stare into the abyss and not only make it all the way back, but arguably be better for it? I'm going to assume the answer is no. At least not the ones who are thumbing out this imbecility. I mean, I really want to talk about the trade. I want to talk about what it means to the Giants and the Bucks and the top of the draft. But it's almost impossible for me to do so when all I'm seeing are tweets like the following. As an example, Rich in the 970 tweets, Bucks GM Jason Light traded for JPP. You've got to hand it to him on engineering such a steal. The Bucks are getting an explosive DE. You think that's bad? How about this? At ShocksRock17, quote, trying to find a reason why the Bucks traded for me, but I can't quite put a finger on it. Regards, JPP. Or about this one? At Keep It Single tweets, I heard JPP is a Buck. Now he can help Jameis with the eat a W speech. Yeah, that's awesome. How about Randall in the OC? I'm sure Randall in the OC's got a handle on this. Quote, JPP to the Bucks, a real life Captain Hook.
Yeah!
No!
Yeah!
Hey, what? No four-finger discount smack? No. They only got a third rounder? The Giants must have taken 20% off that one. I'm sure if I looked hard enough, I could probably find those lame, tired, insensitive, moronic tweets as well. Like, what the hell is the matter with you people? Look, if you want my take on the trade, I will give you my take on the trade. I think the Bucks got a great player. I think they took the one asset they had, cap space, and they used it to take on a contract that's probably a little bit too rich for the Giants' blood, considering they've got to find a way to extend guys like Odell Beckham and Landon Collins. Tampa knows if they're going to survive in a division that's got quarterbacks like Drew Brees, Matt Ryan, and Cam Newton, they have to be able to get after the quarterback. JPP can do that. And he's more than just a pass rusher. Very good against the run as well. See, that's how you break down a trade. By looking at all the angles. By understanding that Dave Gettleman just made a move that could shake up the top five of the draft and get the Giants a couple of offers on that number two pick while he's at it. Not by cracking on a dude for obliterating a couple of digits on America's birthday a couple of years ago. We've already covered all that. Do better because JPP did. And me, I actually root for this guy. I actually think it's one of the most amazing stories I have ever seen. And yes, I was one of the guys who piled on at the time, but this guy made it all the way back. Owned it, was totally accountable for it, totally responsible for it, did the work, made it all the way back. So that to me makes it one of the most amazing stories I've ever seen, except not for the same reason many of you think it is. Justin Pugh is my guest. Justin, good to have you on. How are you?
I'm doing well. How's everything going with you?
Good, good, Justin. Let me ask you about the process. In terms of free agency, when you sign with the Cardinals, what about the process itself? I mean, is it something that you can kind of enjoy? Like, hey, I'm out there, I can go about and find where I want to end up? Or is the process itself just kind of stressful?
It's definitely stressful. I mean, if you're Kirk Cousins, it's not stressful.
Right.
You're going to get a, you know, $90 million contract guaranteed. But as a guy coming off a back injury that was on IR to end the season last year, proving to teams I was healthy, letting them go through that whole physical process, it definitely was a little stressful for me. You know, obviously you value yourself somewhere, and then you got to face the reality of the situations. And luckily I found a team that loved me and wanted me there, and everything worked out perfect.
That's a great answer. If it's Kirk Cousins, it's not stressful because he's got guaranteed money. Just one sidebar on that, Justin. When you look at him, he got a guaranteed contract, right? The first of its kind. Do you think that might open it up to other guys, or is that kind of a one-off because that's a guy who bet on himself a couple of years in a row and he set it up that way?
No, I think it'll start to be the norm. The quarterbacks drive the market. Obviously, the highest paid players in the team, they're the face of the NFL. So once that quarterback club starts, you know, banding together and getting those fully guaranteed contracts, it'll start to trickle down. And then obviously, like the top other top players, the D tackles, the D ends, the left tackles, and then it kind of trickles down. Obviously, if you look at every other sport, they have guaranteed contracts. But obviously, the risk of injury for the NFL is so much higher. That's why it's taking a little bit longer to catch up, I think.
We're talking to Justin Pugh. So what was it about Arizona that made you feel like the Cardinals were the right fit and Arizona was the right place?
The culture. I mean, obviously, the weather is amazing in Arizona, the quality of life, the cost of living. I'm coming from New York where, you know, you pay a few $1,000 a month and they give you a shoebox to live in. But Arizona's been unbelievable. The coaches, Coach Wilkes, Coach Ray Brown, the offensive line coach, just gel with them immediately. Really looking forward to it. And then obviously they have some very, very good players on that roster that I can learn from and play with.
We're talking to Justin Pugh. In terms of coming out here or coming out to Arizona, you are a Northeast guy. You were raised in the Northeast. You went to school in the Northeast. You started your career in the Northeast. Do you have any idea what it's going to be like to play out west and in the desert? And do you have any concerns about things like snakes and scorpions?
So that's what I've been hearing. But I heard as long as you have a good pest control, Bertrand Barry told me that make sure the first hire you make is your pest control guy to make sure that's all taken care of. I'm not a big fan of snakes, but I'm going to make sure I wall off the property so nothing can get in. But, yeah, obviously being a Northeast guy, I'm used to the weather, used to all four seasons. And in Arizona, it's, you know, 2 to 3 months out of the year, it gets pretty hot. But just like in the Northeast, when it's snowing, there's 4 feet of snow on the ground. You go from heated car to heated building, back to heated car, and wherever you're going next. Out there, it's obviously the opposite. You just go from an air-conditioned car to an air-conditioned practice facility, out until we play inside. So I'm not really too concerned about it. And, you know, I just moved down to Florida this past offseason. I'm loving this warm weather.
Yeah, you've set this thing up. And there's a reason why so many athletes who are not even playing in that market just go to that market. Retired athletes go to that market. It's a great place. Justin Pugh, my guest. Listen, I know how tight your family is, and I think people will remember the year that you were drafted. We'll remember that as well. When you signed with the Cards, it would make sense that the first Cardinals jersey that anybody would get would be a Justin Pugh Cardinals jersey. But your brother already had a Pat Tillman jersey. How did that come to be, and what does it mean to be joining a team that Pat Tillman played for?
Yeah, definitely. My family's a military family. My brother's in the Air Force, and it's always been, you know, obviously a soft spot for our family. We take a lot of pride in supporting our armed forces. And when I signed with them, my 9-year-old nephew Jack told my brother, he's like, "Dad, we already have a Cardinals jersey hanging in the house. It's the only one we have hanging in the house." And it was a Pat Tillman jersey. So I didn't even put two and two together until, you know, I told the Cardinals. I'm like, my brother just, you know, told me this. And it's a complete honor. He obviously gave the ultimate sacrifice, and he was a guy that you can look up to and someone that you try to, you know, model yourself after. Obviously, being in the NFL, you can't do what he was able to do, but, you know, try to wear it with pride and represent the Cardinal organization with pride, and that's something I look forward to doing.
Justin Pugh joining us. And you mentioned your back injury. I go back to that because you were part of a great uninterrupted video about the relationship between you and your neighbor, Bill. It's an amazing story. It starts with him saying a prayer for you and your back. Who is Bill, and then how did you meet him for the first time?
Well, I met Bill like 3 years ago when I first moved into Jersey City. And next-door neighbor, he was going through some hard times. His wife had passed away. He's collecting Social Security. So when she passed away, it was a little bit harder for him to keep up with the rent. He fell behind a little bit. And so he was about to get evicted. And he literally just left a note on my door asking if he could have a conversation with me. And all he knew was I drove like a SUV. And he's like, "It looks nice enough. Maybe he can help me out." And he was 70 at the time. He was 68 years old. And he comes to my door in tears. And as a 26-year-old, 25-year-old, you don't realize the magnitude of what was happening. And he asked me if I could help him out. And obviously, I think if anyone was in that situation, they would help out somebody. And so now he's kind of become, you know, one of my boys. He's always around the house. He's always hanging out. And the reason we did the video I didn't want to pat on the back or anything like that. I just wanted to make the video so people could see what he was going through, so we could maybe get him some help. Because I knew this year that I might not be coming back to New York. So now we have like a food prep company that sends him meals once a week. We got a sports drink company that sends him sports drinks. So he's getting by. He's getting better and better. I know he'll be rocking a Arizona Cardinals jersey every Sunday. Three games, I'm a fan there in North Jersey.
You're a good dude. He, in the video, he says, quote, about you, without him, I'd probably be homeless. One more thing, though. It's not a one-way street. He asked you at one point, what can I do to help you? And you said you couldn't think of anything because, as you've said, he's not the most limber guy. But then he started to take your trash out. How did that come to be, and how much pride does he take in that job?
He takes the utmost pride. And then one day, like, my dog was bothering me a little bit during the season, and he took the trash out. He's like, Justin, let me do this every day. So I kind of made it his job because he's not working it right now. And so we started taking the trash out every Sunday. If I'd ever go out there and try to help him take it out, like, I'd always go out there with him when he was doing it, and he would always yell at me, no, this is my job. So he takes very good pride in it. He's like the neighborhood watch. He's always sitting outside on his stoop, so he's always checking in on my house. If I wasn't there, I was in an away game to make sure no one was coming around.
That's a great story. All right, now, before I let you go, you are a Syracuse guy. How much attention are you paying to your alma mater and what they're doing in the NCAA tournament?
Oh, every year. It's like everyone's like, oh, Syracuse doesn't deserve to be in, this, that, and the other thing. You get us into the tournament, we're gonna wreak havoc. And I'm looking forward to watching them tonight. Honestly, Duke's a matchup that, you know, we've played them before, so the zone's not going to catch them by surprise as much. So we've got to go out there and just play hard. And you know Bayheim's going to have something up his sleeve. So I'm looking forward to another upset tonight and the continued dominance of the Syracuse Orange men in the NCAA tournament.
Come on, man. The zone, catch them by surprise. They play your zone. They stole that zone from you. They know about that zone. They're playing it.
I'm just saying, Bayheim's going to do something to throw them off a little bit. There's just to it. We play them, you know, obviously twice a year. But it's going to be different come tournament time. The pressure's on a little bit more. I'm looking forward to my guys getting
on. Bayheim, he is an unbelievable cat. Did you spend much time with him when you were on campus?
When we were there, we were always jealous of the basketball teams. They were number one in the nation. We were just trying to get to a bowl game. So they had their own separate wing, the Carmelo Anthony Center. They were always over there. So now that I'm in the NFL, I can go back and talk to those guys. But back then, you know, they were big men on campus.
Justin, one last thought. I thought of this. You know, when you come to Arizona, that means you get to reunite with your old college teammate, Chandler Jones. The two of you were not exactly the most hype recruits when you arrived in college. What were the two of you like at that time? And then how do you explain how both of you got to where you are right now?
Well, when Doug Marrone came in, he really, you know, turned the whole program around and created a blue-collar, like, toughness to us. And me and Chandler started going against each other. I was a freshman. He was a sophomore. And we didn't know how good each other were at the time. We were just out there battling and thought that was the norm. And then we made a pact. I think it was like his junior year, my sophomore year, where, you know, we're going to go first round. And then obviously he goes, he gets picked first round. And 1 year after him, I got first round. So it's going to be exciting to go back there. We had some epic battles. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm not playing left tackle out there, so I don't know if I'm going against him too much. But I'm definitely going to try to slide out and go against him a few times just for, you know, old time's sake.
Let's go to Naples. Lauren in Naples. Lauren, what's going on? Hey, Lauren.
Are you talking to me live?
You are live, Lauren. You are on the air, and we are live. What's going on?
I just wanted to talk about Michigan basketball for a second. Then I want to talk about me going to the Yacht Club later.
Awesome. I like both those topics. How about Michigan basketball? Do you like the way your guys played?
Darn right. Rockman scored 24 points. Wagner's throwing it down. You know, Mo Lips, Mo Tongue. You got, I mean, they're looking like the Fab Five, putting them to shame.
They got it going on. So are you, how are you a Michigan fan? Did you go to school there? Did you grow up in Michigan? How'd that come to be?
I grew up in Michigan.
Okay. All right. So you like what you see, and they look great. So, all right, so that's that. You mentioned the Yacht Club. What's up with the Yacht Club?
Going to have some mojitos and some fish tacos.
Yeah. What's that? Is that something you do on the weekends?
Yeah, I like to have a good time.
I like that. That's cool. What else happens at the Yacht Club?
I don't know. I like to get frisky.
Okay. Thanks for Thanks for the update. What? Nice talking to you. Goodbye. I like to get frisky. That's the sound it makes. Welcome. Welcome to the jungle. A tremendous Monday to you. How was your weekend? I am Jim Rome. I'm live in Southern California. Exactly how was your weekend? Because the NCAA tournament's weekend was amazing. Maybe the best weekend ever.
Yeah! The clock's going to run out. The ultimate upset has happened.
Put some respect on it. That's how you win a game, and that's how you win the internet. They did something that nobody is ever going to forget.
Nothing feels worse than this. Nothing.
Oh, and Loyola wins.
Porter Moser is my guest.
Thanks for having me. The jungle was great to me. We talked last week, so thanks for having me on.
What a f***ing game,
Coach Musselman. Hey, Jim, you know what I do to get hype? I take my shirt off. I take it off. I can't hear you, XR4TI. When I put you on my first radio program back in Santa Barbara, we didn't grow up together, but we really came up together.
Every time I come on with you, my phone blows up, so thanks for having me on. Thanks for a little Wolfpack pub, and I appreciate the friendship.
John Calipari is my guest.
Jim Rome. How the horses doing, Jim Rome?
Cal.
You and I haven't spoken in a while, so we'll have no poop in the ice cream stories. I do have another one that I may give to you. But guys are starting to follow him because they're thinking maybe that's how I break through. It is how you break through.
You got to admit, claiming that dinosaurs were pets for 50-foot human beings is one of the all-time great angles. What if they had dinosaur purses that they rocked on the way into the giant mall? Or how about one of those dinosaur Bjorns that they can wear in the front of them? Bill Self, my guest. We were talking about the unreal collection of basketball minds in Lawrence with Larry Brown.
Larry Brown was
Coach
there.
Coach Brown has given so many guys an opportunity to do so many things just because of their connection to Coach Brown.
Larry Brown.
Mike Krzyzewski is my guest.
There's a dignity. There's a feeling that you have when you show up and you're ready to do a good job with no excuses. Work shouldn't be a bad word because if you work, you get better and people can count on you.
I actually heard Coach K speak when I was getting my NBA, and it was phenomenal.
Chris Beard is my guest.
You know, what we'd like to do is we'd like to continue to write the story. You know, is we sure would like to make it one more day. I'd love to be on the show again because that means we're still playing.
I text him a video and I was like, hey, I'm burning.
I want to hear from a lover who got broken off badly.
She decided to go haywire on me and light my chest on fire.
Oh, dude.
I mean, at that point, all you can do is laugh and wonder why you threw a piece of meat at my cranium.
Mark Few is my guest.
We've been a one twice, and I can tell you, Jim, that is not a fun game to coach to. The crowd turns on you. Even the officials kind of get excited, and it feels like everything's working against you.
Are the Chargers still dead to you?
As long as that management's there, I'll never step foot anywhere near that place.
Hey, Sam, the Browns are holding your lottery ticket. Rip it out of their hands. Refusing to throw at the combine won't mean jack if you can spin it in the next hour. Go time, Samuel. Go get yours. W.S. Tobias.
There's a snowman standing next to me. He drops his woolen scarf, and there they were, a foot from my face. Snowballs. Frosty the Snowman.
I'm under the... I want to hear from somebody in the O.C. or Beverly Hills. Does Botox melt? Are you getting your face injected? Terry Stotts is my guest.
There's a lot of bad things out there that if you internalize that, it can really get to you.
Do you tell your guys stay away from it, or do you just not even bother?
I don't bother. I think they all handle it in their own way. You know, people tweet about you, don't they?
You bet. You bet. How canneth we think rodent features are funny, or a vagabond who hath no home and no money? And how dareth we laugh at ruddy complexions, or weight challenge folk who crave cakes and confections? Bravo, Dan Lux. Lauren, great to have you on. How are you?
You are my idol, man.
There's nothing special about me, trust me.
I'm your clone. Guy.
Twitter. Roses are red, violets are blue, Lauren is drunk and a little stupid too. Come on, Phil.
Kevin and Bean. Okay.
So it's like the A is taking on the A.
No, that's whack.
That's whack.
Okay, whack.
That's whack.
That's corny.
He went with two cornies and three whacks in the first answer alone. That might be even more impressive than his 17 assists and no turnovers last night.
I am Chris Hansen.
I'm fine, Chris Hansen. I was just leaving. No, you're not. Take a seat right there. Let's talk. Talk about what?
Did you bring condoms with you?
It's not me. You got the wrong guy. That's not what all these transcripts say, sir.
I can't control my horny level.
I know you all want me to make something up that really isn't there.
Santa is not real.
So you can make a big deal out of this?
Santa isn't real. Neither is the Easter Bunny.
And Cinderella
Matt Norlander is my guest.
Sister Jean, she's gone international. She's gone galactic, to be frank.
Emailed.
My sister Jean. She's powerful, sexy. Yours, Kentucky. Send Fabian.
Good morning, Rob.
That is exactly what I'm saying, dude.
Rob, some of that karma on me, bro. I haven't left home, dude. I'm like, all right.
What is the job?
Material handling. Podcast is the best where I get a...
Travis Kelce. Hey, brother, were you afraid that I was not going to ask you about Old Spice?
No, I'm just so excited to talk about Old Spice.
Me too, man. Me too.
Twitter.
I heard JPP is a buck. Now he can help Jameis with the eat a W speech.
That's a W.
Transition.
Randy Newman. He loves L.A.
Seriously, go blue.
Cosmic justice.
Ham.
Band from Chicago.
And when I mean luxury, I mean luxury.
There's no magic wand.
Sirius XM 206.
It's an honor to be on your show. I appreciate it.
Hell, have your bull and eat it too.
Do what?
That's what.
That's whack.
That's what.
He's the goat.
Pineapple Express.
James Kelly.
And good luck to you with everything, the breeding and the racing.
Bang. Oh, one more thing.
Fish tacos.
Good night now.
Alvy.
Good night now!